Welcome to the final episode of HPC for 2021. I am Tyler Unsell, the editor-in-chief of Signal Horizon and co-host of this here lovely horror podcast. And I am joined, as I am every episode, by my co-host and the sharpest skeleton I know, Oren Gray. Oren, how were your holidays, man?
They were all right, actually, for the most part. You know, COVID notwithstanding, they were all right.
Yeah. Were you, did you spend most of it at home just enjoying the company of people you know are COVID safe?
Yeah, I mean, most of it. We saw some relatives and stuff, but I mean, I'm never a big, like, big group gathering person on the, even when it's not the plague times. So, you know, we didn't do a ton.
Yeah, that's exactly how Nicole and I were. You know, we did go out of town, but for a variety of circumstances, we stayed in a hotel. That way we could kind of quarantine at night and stay away from everybody. And her side of the family is very, very large. But it was a smaller group this year. So, you know, we did our part, got the hell out of Dodge. And then on Christmas Eve, my face started hurting. And I went through about 3 days of the most intense pain I've ever had. And then I had a root canal yesterday, and I'm a fucking new guy. So tooth pain is the real deal. I feel bad for each and every one of you if you've ever had to deal with that. But yeah, that sucks, man. But it is what it is. And I'm so happy to be able to talk that, you know, I'm kind of thrilled to talk about end of the year shit. Yeah?
Sounds good.
Yeah, all right. So here's kind of how we're going to look tonight. Both Oren and I are going to go through our kind of top five favorite horror items. They books, they can be television shows, they can be movies. We've kind of left that up in the air. And then we will follow that by a much, much longer list of all of our honorable mentions. And there are a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, like, part of the reason why we have to do a top five list of just, like, every damn thing is, like, sure, you know, I saw more movies than I did in previous years, but last year, the previous plague year, but still that wasn't a ton.
Yeah. Wasn't as much as in years past or there is like, and I tend to do this every year, right? Like I keep this list either on my computer or in my head of like movies that people are talking about. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to see that. Because I write our best of the year list, you know, speaking of that should come out later. I will say, yeah, it should come out tomorrow. So if you're listening to this, you can go to Signal Horizon and check it out. But like all these movies, and I still am going to run out of time. Like I'm not going to see Soho.
Last Night in Soho.
I'm just not gonna make it. And I resigned myself to it. And I'm like, shit. All right. Yeah. It'll be okay. But
yeah, I mean, like Letterboxd tells me I saw 19 movies that came out this year, which honestly is more than I thought I had that came out this year. Like one of the other places I write for wanted everybody to do a top 10 list, and I was like, I barely saw 10. Like
all right.
No, go ahead.
I'm dying now. I got to figure out
how many you saw.
Yeah. How many I saw? How did you? You got this is fascinating podcast talk. But
it is fascinating. You just go to your Letterboxd, go to films, and you just sort them by release date, and then just count. That's what I did. Okay, so I counted from from the top.
Okay, so I go to diary, and then I go to...
Just go to films. It's next to diary.
It says profile, lists, and watch list.
Oh, fuck. Are you on your phone?
Yep.
Oh, I don't have any idea what it looks like on the phone.
That's all right. Hold on. Let's see here. Oh, wait. Check this out. I have seen 77 this year.
Holy shit, that came out this year?
I think so.
God damn.
Let's just see. That sounds like an awful lot to me, too, but maybe I was much better than I thought I was.
Wow. Blew me out of the water by, like,
many. Let's see. I don't think. No, no. All right, I'm going to count them. Here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 36. I've seen 38. So
that's still a lot more than me, but not not orders of magnitude more than me, like 70 some was.
Well, at the end, I don't want to give away, but you got to be thinking about in your mind. I'm going to ask you what a potential like New Year's resolution that you have when it comes to horror. I will tell you, mine is to watch much more movies. I'd like to get 100 in this year, which is a few more than this last year. But I don't know. There are so many times that I find myself at the end of a long evening, like sorting through Twitter or like fucking around and like watching TikTok or, you know, whatever. And it's like, I can do all of those things, but I also can have a movie on, you know, I should be watching a movie and doing this kind of stuff on my own.
So yeah. I mean, one of the things, like one of the ways that I watch as many movies as I do, because while I watched like 19 movies that came out in 2021, I watched several hundred movies total in 2021. Right. Like, I keep a list every year and I have not done the math on my list for this year, but in general, I crack up over 200 and under 4, somewhere in there is what I watch in a year on average. And like part of the way I can do that at all is that I just watch them in parts. Like I can't carve out 2 hours or God help us with modern movies, 3 or 4 hours to watch a movie all in one sitting. But I can watch one on my lunch, you know, while I'm eating lunch. I can watch 30 minutes. I can watch 30 minutes, you know, before bed. I can watch, you know, whatever. And I watch them in pieces. That's the only way I can do it. That's the only way I can do that many.
Well, and I think it's a testament. I'm currently watching this this movie that I watch in the gym, essentially. Like, I've been watching it in about like 30 minute increments, but it's called Stoker Hills. And it was originally billed to me as a found footage film. It is not. It's much more like it's like 30 minutes of found footage and then about an hour of police procedural. And I'm really fucking digging it. And I'm also allowing myself space to watch those movies now. Cause like there was always this voice in the back of my brain when I would do that before, they'd be like, this is not what the filmmakers intended and blah, blah, blah. And I would feel mildly guilty about that. Fuck that. I've been so busy doing so much. I don't think the movie lost anything by being watched in those increments. And I think it's going to have to be okay in this new world that we live in. It's going to have to be okay.
Yeah. So, going to watch Dune on my phone, like Denis Villeneuve intended.
I actually watched that movie straight through, but I was at a debate tournament while I was doing it. So
yeah, I haven't actually watched it yet. Just he was one of the people who made a big deal about people seeing movies in theaters. And it's like, he was not to the same level as fucking Chris Nolan and Tenet when we were like in the very first like worst part of the pandemic. And he's like, everyone has to see my movie in the theater because that's how I meant it to be seen. I'm like, screw you, dude.
Yeah, like fucking people are dying here, all right? Like, not to mention, I didn't see that movie in the theater. Maybe that has changed, but I've now tried to watch that movie 3 different times. And I still, maybe it's because I'm old and deaf, but I can't hear a single fucking thing that is going on in that movie. And there are important plot points that I'm sure are being said by someone. I just can't fucking hear. So
there was an article that was making the rounds recently, actually, about like how sound mixing is done in modern movies and why it's harder to hear dialogue than it used to be.
Okay.
It's an interesting read if you give a shit about like sound mixing and stuff. But yeah, it is actually hard to understand people in movies a lot of the time for various reasons.
Well, that actually makes me feel better. You know, maybe it's not just me.
Yeah, Chris Nolan's movies are among the big offenders in that category of like the dialogue is mixed in a weird way that makes it just sort of disappear underneath the other noise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but I watch most things now with the subtitles on. It's just easier for me. And my wife will come into the room, though, and be like, hey, Grandpa, if I watch this with you, do we have to watch it with it?
You know, I usually don't. My friend Jay usually does, so I have him on when I'm watching with him. I usually don't, but I'm also usually watching with headphones on.
Ah, okay.
Like nine times, because, you know, like nine times out of ten when I'm watching a movie, Grace is home somewhere. She's either asleep or, you know, working or whatever.
Right.
And so I've got Bluetooth headphones and I've got those on. So, you know, it's right in my ear.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't get lost in the, you know, ambient noise of a 5-year-old screaming for more hot chips and my 15-year-old asking me if I can drive him to his girlfriend. So, yeah. Maybe I should try the earphones. I think I'll go that route. All right. So before we get into our list, though, a couple of very important kind of housekeeping things. Number one, and I don't want to speak for you, Oren, but we're really stoked to find a new partner here going into 2022. And that is going to be the Stray Cat Film Center. The Stray Cat has graciously offered us to host live events there once a month. So we are gonna start showing up locally here in Kansas City. So if you're a Midwest guy and you want to get in to see Oren and I not only screen a really badass movie, but then talk about theoretically its pedagogical usefulness, then you should check out February 1st will be our first live event at the Stray Cat. And we are going to screen 976 Evil. So we are really jazzed to kind of re-explore. I don't know about you, but it's been 30 years probably since I've seen it. So
I've never seen it.
Ah, all right.
I picked it. I've never seen it. I've seen the sequel.
Okay. 976 Evil 2, right?
Yeah, yep.
And it's like Evil Calls Back or something, if I remember the box art on it.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it has nothing to do with the first one. Like, it's one of those sequels that's a sequel in name only. It was a spec script that got the 976 Evil, like, name jammed on the front of it.
Sure.
As was common back in those days. It has, in the sequel, which we'll talk about when we screen the regular movie, I'm sure, because I love talking about this, it has this moment that is amazing, and it is so amazing that I have forgotten literally the entire rest of the movie. All of 976 Evil is just this one scene in my head now. There's this scene because the bad guy in it is basically like Freddy, right? He can control reality a little bit in these weird ways.
Okay.
And there's this scene where this girl is one of the victims is flipping through channels on her TV, and she's flipping between Night of the Living Dead and It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
And she gets pulled into the TV. And so she's in the big final scene in It's a Wonderful Life, the Christmas tree, an angel gets its wings scene.
Sure, yeah.
And gradually, everyone in that scene turns into zombies.
Oh, yes.
From Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
And so, like, it's actually footage from It's a Wonderful Life until the very end, and then it's all people made up to look just like those people, only zombies. It's great.
Oh, my gosh. I
love
that.
It's so seamless and good.
So it's like the precursor to, like, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, you know? It's like,
sure,
let's take this classical, you know, thing, and, oh, yeah. All right. Well, I'm stoked to check out both of those. And to give you guys a little bit of update on our schedule in January, we're going to be releasing some really special episodes in January. You can go ahead and call this what did you call it when we were talking about it earlier?
Month of Screams.
The Month of Screams. We are going to talk about all of the Scream movies in some capacity, but we have some special guests, some of which we are ready to announce and some of which we are working on right now. But the Month of Screams will end January 20th when we have esteemed author, Stoker Award winner, one of my favorite authors of all times, and an absolute king of trying to parse through slasher movies, Stephen Graham Jones is going to join us to talk about the newest Scream movie literally like days after its release.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, we're going to talk about the educational importance of the rules of slasher movies. Yeah, buddy. I'm more than a little excited about that.
Yeah, so. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great dude.
We're just gonna shut up and let him talk the whole time.
Oh fuck yes. Yeah. He'll have to be like, "Hey guys, are you still there?" I'll be like, "Oh yeah, yeah." But whatever you would like to. Do you have any cookie recipes? Yeah, like, just fucking talk, man. Yeah, it'll be great stuff. We're excited about it.
Just tell us about your knife.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Oren, what do you say? You wanna talk about our stuff?
I think we're ready. Yep.
All right, it's time. Let's go. Not that I have them in any kind of particular order, but I'm going to start with my listed number five.
Okay.
And my listed number five is something that everybody has kind of talked about this year, but it maintains a great level of dread. It has a real legitimate existential conversation about what happens when you die, that I found touching and really emotional in this great kind of during this great period of time that I needed that, you know. But I am talking about Mike Flanagan's Midnight Mass that you can still check out on Netflix. It is a mini series, so it is like I don't know what Netflix calls them, like a special event series or something like that. But just absolutely bonkers. So. Have you had a chance to check it out at all?
So, yeah, hilariously, I have not seen a single movie on your list or show.
Oh, shit. All right.
I've read one thing on your list, but I've not seen a single thing you listed in your actual top five.
Well, this has got to be near the top of your list, man. I will tell you, like, it was a little daunting at first because it's, I think it's like 7 episodes. And they're all an hour long, right? So that's great. 7 hours off the bat. It has, and I didn't write down the name, so please forgive me. But we were also Friday Night Lights people, and the main quarterback, right? Last name was Sorensen, is the main character of this. I'm like, oh shit, I'm in. I will spend 6.5 hours following this guy. And a really clever monster and a critique of organized religion. I mean, it's kind of it is my happy place in all capacity. So
like I know a lot of people who really don't like Mike Flanagan, and I know a lot of people who really do. And I'm kind of in the middle. Like I am almost never completely let down by his stuff, but also almost never completely love it. Like it's always like that was good.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I have not watched any of his miniseries yet. Like, I haven't watched either of the Haunting of the House or the other one. Because I had Netflix turned off for, like, ever, right? And then I turned it on for October so I could watch a few things. But, like, you know, a 7-hour thing was too much of a commitment. I think I turned it off again by then or whatever. But, like, so I just haven't gotten to any of his, like, any of his miniseries yet. And they're all hanging out on Netflix, so I can't watch them the other way.
Right.
So...
Well, maybe I'll have to pass along my Netflix password. Co-host is close enough to family, so
right?
Like, but you'll have to binge them all. This is what I will say about the miniseries. Generally, I would say I liked the Haunting of Hill House. I would have given it like 6 or 7, maybe 7.5. I did not love what the Taming of the Shrew, whatever that one was.
Blind Man.
My wife was a little higher on it than I was. I just found it really boring. Maybe a little too character driven. Midnight Mass is my favorite of all of them so far. I'm not in the bag for him. Like, I like Dr. Sleep, but I was not like, oh my God, this is amazing, you know?
Yeah, like the only one of his movies I've ever like completely loved. Like I had a good time at all of them. Like I've never left one except for maybe Hush. I've never left one and been like, meh, I wish I hadn't watched that. But like I really like Gerald's Game. Gerald's Game was my favorite.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He did a really great job with it. But
yeah. A great adaptation. Like I've really felt like he understood kind of what made the book so creepy, right? And I thought designed that film really, really well. I mean, dude, for me, like, his early shit is as scary as his older shit. Like, I loved Oculus. I loved Oculus.
Yeah, I mean, and, most, I dug Oculus quite a bit, too. Most people really like Absentia. Like, even the people who don't like him really like Absentia. Yeah.
Well, and then the other that it took me, like, forever to kind of figure out was Ouija 2. And I was like, why is this movie as good as... Because I, like, watched it just to, like, put something on because the first one is awful. Like, terrible. Like,
again... Whether you like Mike Flanagan or not, and whether you like Ouija 2 or not, frankly, there has maybe never been a bigger step up in quality from a first movie to a sequel than Ouija to Ouija 2. Like, Ouija is, like, it is just, it's not, like, gonna hurt you bad, but it's just bottom rung, like, sci-fi channel. You put it on to have something on. Teen scary movie stuff. It's nothing. It's a non-entity. Right. It basically doesn't exist.
Well, it's like Blumhouse for a while. Thankfully, they moved away from it. We're making these kind of like teeny bopper horror films, of which I would put like Fantasy Island on there. I would put Truth or Dare on there. They're fine, right? Like they're okay, but. Go ahead.
I love a good like crappy teeny bopper horror movie, right? Like I love a good
movie. Right, me
those
too. Yeah.
I love them; they're great. Like some of my favorite movies are those. But like even among those, like a Ouija is just a very forgettable one. It has like two good bits, and most of those are cribbed from Insidious.
Like I have a great moment with a face coming out of the dark that is almost identical to what you've seen. I'm not entirely in the bag for Mike Flanagan, but what I am in the bag for are people going through existential crises and wondering if this is what it's all about. As he looks around with his hands wide open, you know? And Mike Flanagan is like, I'll give you that movie. And also a really badass looking fucking monster. And I'm like, okay, all right.
And so, also, apparently, endless monologues, I'm told. Just
so many
nothing monologues. But monologues from hell to breakfast.
Yep. And, I mean, maybe some of that is my theater background or whatever. Like, I appreciate... not trying to hide that, right? Like,
I also think a good monologue. So,
we're not gonna try to cram this into a conversation two people are having. We're gonna be like, and now it's my turn to talk for 3.5 minutes. It's like, oh, okay, all right. Once you resign yourself to that, everything else.
When I die, my body stops functioning, shut down. All at once or gradually, my breathing stops, my heart stops beating. Clinical death. And a bit later, like 5 whole minutes later, my brain cells start dying. But in the meantime, in between, maybe my brain releases a flood of DMT. Psychedelic drug released when we dream, so I dream bigger than I have ever dreamed before, because it's all of it, just the last dump of DMT all at once, and my neurons are firing and I'm seeing this fireworks.
What's your number 5
imagination? And I
for the purposes of my number 5, I'm actually going to talk about the Fear Street trilogy.
All right.
Which is actually a good example of me liking teeny bopper horror shits.
For sure.
But no, so like, it's actually what I turned Netflix on to watch, was the Fear Street trilogy, because I'd heard it was pretty good. And again, I love that kind of like R.L. Stein. And I literally, in this case, R.L. Stein, you know, like, just one notch above Goosebumps age level stuff, like the high school babysitter in peril, that kind of crap. Like that is, I love that shit. I have a huge soft spot for that stuff. And like, I thought the director, whose name I'm blanking on, of all three Fear Street movies, did a great job.
Lee Janiak, I believe.
Yeah, who did Honeymoon.
Yeah, which is fantastic too. Yeah.
I thought she did a great job. The first one especially, 1994, looks amazing.
Yeah.
And they
really do. So nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And it also has an incredibly gory kill, which I'm not like a big gore person, but like when you do, like if you're gonna do gore, do something fucking insane.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of a beloved character. So you're like, right. Yep. Oh shit. All right. These guys are fucking around.
And so it actually reminded me of, so like I got really into, for whatever reason, I have no idea, again, because I like these kind of stupid R.L. Stine book things, I got really into the Scream TV series that ran for like two seasons.
Yep.
It eventually did a third season, but the third season was unrelated. The first two were like all the same characters and the same story and everything.
Yep.
And like it does a similar thing where like you've got these like four or five main characters, and it's fairly, I mean, it's not like bloodless, but it's, I mean, it's, you know, it's TV level violence for the most part. And then one character gets split in half with like one of those big chainsaw things on a backhoe, and is just the most ridiculously grisly thing. And it's like one of the other characters, like boyfriend or something, right? Like someone they love, and they watch it happen. And it's just this incredible, and then his ghost keeps appearing to them. It's not like they're hallucinating probably, but like, so that you see this person split in half appearing to people and shit. And it's just, that's what it reminded me of in Fear Street. Like it reminded me of that, like just so over the top, but also kind of a gut punch. Like at the same time, even though it was ridiculous, it was very. But yeah, so I loved the Fear Street movies. I had a good time with those. I thought they were
fantastic. Yeah.
They were ambitious enough to be like something new and not just like a Scream slasher thing. But also, you know, fun enough that they didn't feel like they were trying to be like an A24 movie or whatever.
Yeah. there is not a single part of any of those movies where anybody involved is taking themselves too serious, you know? While at the same time, It doesn't portend to be something super serious, but like it's a high quality film, you know. It is not an ABC Halloween special of the week, you know, which is kind of what I was a little worried it might be. But
it looks like a mid budget studio film. Like it looks as good as, you know, I don't know, Happy Death Day or whatever, something you see in the theater.
Yep.
Well.
And given, you know, a world that isn't ravaged by a pandemic, I would have seen all of these movies in the theater, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the initial release plan was to have one go in like June 1st, one July 1st, and one August 1st. So it was just this like kind of summer event, which I think would have been really cool and super interesting.
Yeah.
Folks like you and I would have. Yeah, right. Stuck in our house still. Well, speaking of things that sound terrible, my number four was not terrible, but its sounds were certainly scary. And that would be The Sound of Violence, which is directed by Alex Noyer and stars Jasmine Savoy Brown, which is one of the main characters in this television series right now that everyone keeps emailing me about. It's called Yellow Jackets on Showtime. Do you know anything about it?
I do not, but Trevor Henderson has been talking it up like nonstop. It is like his new favorite thing. So I'm sure it's good.
I got it. For it.
Yeah.
Well, The Sound of Violence is essentially the story of Jasmine Savoy Brown's character who essentially learns she's got synesthesia, so she can like hear music, or she can see music and like hear color and then, you know, that kind of stuff, but essentially she learns to make music by not to spoil anything, because I think you kind of figure it out really early in the movie, by like torturing people. And this, she gets more acclaim for the better music that she makes. And so obviously as things kind of plan out, if you are anybody in her orbit, you end up becoming a part of her music in not in a great way. But it's like if Saw were trying to be halfway intelligent and having a discussion about art and certainly how traumatic events can lead to sometimes beautiful art. And I think that's kind of Neuer's central thesis. I had the luxury of interviewing him. I think it was for Fantastic Fest, maybe. That's what I'm going to say. But he's a great guy, and that movie is absolutely bonkers. And I think you can get it on VOD right now, so you should go check it out. Yeah. I'm not a huge big fan of torture porn, generally, you know, the Hostel movies. I saw all that shit, and it's fine. And I was a little worried that this movie would lean too much into it, but it stands on its own, and it's got a lot to say, so...
Awesome.
It's well worth you checking out. What's your number four?
I am gonna actually talk about Poison Flowers and Pandemonium. Ooh. Which is the last, unfortunately, collection from Richard Sala. And if you don't know who Richard Sala is, he is a comic artist who does very unique, idiosyncratic stuff that's like, it's like if horror movies from like the 1920s through the like Italian giallos of the 70s all happened at the same time in the same world.
Ooh, okay.
And so like cool. it's very unique, and it's very much him, and no one else has ever done anything quite like it. And unfortunately he passed away in 2021, so at a relatively young age. And so it'll be the last book we ever get of him, but he had finished this and submitted it to his publisher just before he died. So yeah, it's a very thick, nice omnibus of several of his stories, and it's really good.
Awesome. Well, we'll put a link to that too in the show notes in case you wanted to check it out. He's another one of those guys that thankfully I have your influence here to help round out some of these folks that I may not have necessarily been exposed to. But yeah, once you have, it's otherworldly, you know, it's so different than anything else that you've seen that, you know, like, it's like, why the hell do I not know about this guy? So when he passed away, I was like, this sucks. Yeah.
And like you can take a learning, like a lot of people can take a little bit of like a adjustment period to get into his stuff because it is so different.
It from, is, yeah.
Like other things. So yeah, like it took me a little while to like get really into it, but then I did. And he and I used to talk on Facebook some too and everything. He'd recommend old movies to me and shit like that. So
cool. Well, I the closest thing that I could come to, right? Because it has for me this weird nostalgia, or this it's like this part of my brain that was like, okay, this reminds me of something, and I couldn't. And I was talking to an old friend of mine, and we would steal. His dad had these collections, right, of the Far Side, right, and we would like on sleepovers or campouts or whatever, we would steal these books and read them, and absolutely loved them. And I think the way that he creates characters is not entirely unlike how Greg Larson created some of the Far Side characters. They look very similar. Only one is definitely horror. And it's like, oh my God, it's amazing. Yeah, it's great. So yeah. I think if The Exorcist met, the Far Side, it would be good stuff. Yeah. All right. So my number three is The Night House, directed by David Bruckner, who also did The Ritual, which was another one of my favorites a few years ago. And it stars the impeccable, the incredibly talented Rebecca Hall. And the movie is terrifying. I love the idea that the monster in this film is created out of negative space, right? So it's the monster kind of hides in the corner of the room where, like, I don't know, the profile of a candlestick will hide his face, right? And you only get as he turns and, you know, shows his whole face that he was hiding in profile or whatever. And there are so many brilliant, fantastic kind of cinematic elements of all of that that make the film very scary. I think the art itself is terrifying. In fact, I'm using a little bit of that art to kind of focus my next tattoo. So like, it's really, really cool shit. And I don't think you can go wrong with it. And another, I would say, very intimate, but terrifying film. Have you seen that one?
I have not. Again, not seen one single movie on this list.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'll stop asking that then.
But I love Rebecca Hall. Rebecca Hall's amazing. I was actually just talking about her with someone today. Just about, like, I was talking about, like, fucking Godzilla versus Kong or something terrible. But, like, you know, Rebecca Hall's, like, always good. Like, even when she's in something terrible, she's good. Like, yep.
Yeah. Well, she plays a teacher, okay? I think it's actually a speech teacher too, if I nice. Remember correctly. And it is, like, if I'm being perfectly honest with everyone here, I think everybody that listens on a regular basis knows that I'm a teacher. I will also be perfectly frank. I think I speak for most teachers. This is a terrible fucking year for all of us because everyone expects things to be normal, and it's very clearly not. You know, my school board meetings have been full of people accusing me of teaching critical race theory and, you know, saying that we're trying to harm their kids. And yeah. So anyways, you know, like, it has not been a great year to be a teacher. So to see Rebecca Hall, when this, you know, parent comes in and is like, "Hey, my kid got a B instead of an A. What the fuck is up with that?" And she is like, "I mean, he did this work late. I gave him the opportunity. I don't know what more you really want from me." She's like, "Well, I think he really deserves an A." And she's like, "You know what? My husband killed himself on Thursday. So I wasn't here to grade that makeup assignment. But since you're here and this grade is so important to you, yeah, I'm going to give him an A. And when you leave, I'm going to sob because my husband killed himself 3 days ago." So, and like, the parent, it like, stops. And she's like, "I'm so sorry for your loss." And she said, "Yep, but not sorry enough that you're not here. So take, you know, whatever. Take Robert's A and have a great day or what the fuck ever." It was just so great to finally see a teacher react, you know, in that fashion. I was like, fuck yeah. And so whatever else happened in the movie, I don't know. I was rooting for her. So.
I don't know. There was a monster or something. I don't know. I didn't watch past that point, but.
Yeah, no, that monster was across from her early. And I'm like, oh shit. Whatever monster she encounters is not going to be nearly as scary as this fucking thing. Yeah. Yep. So that is what it is, man. But yeah, you, it's got to be up there on your list to watch in 2022 because it's good.
I am really excited to see it. And honestly, I mean, since she's a teacher especially, we should definitely like do an episode on it or something once I do.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
But yeah, no, it was one of the ones that I wanted to catch and just didn't get the opportunity. Like, I missed the opportunity for whatever reason. And then it was gone from theaters. And then I haven't VOD'd it. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is definitely on my list. It is definitely on my list. There's a shit ton of stuff on my list.
I know.
I mean, like, I've got a little note, like, these are the movies that would probably have been on my top five had I seen them.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, like, I haven't seen Benedetta, which I really want to see. I haven't seen Nightmare Alley, which, you know, apparently no one has based on its box office.
Yeah.
Which is a little rough, but... you know, I haven't seen The Green Knight, which I heard really mixed things about, but looks gorgeous.
Yep.
You know,
and I think your evaluation of what you've heard about that is probably true. Beautiful movie. That was my response.
Like, I know some people who really loved it and makes me think I might, even if it isn't good, just because like it might be things I really love. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those, and there's just so many of those this year.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. You know, like, there's always my to-be-watched list only gets longer and never gets shorter, but C'est la vie. There's, you know, too much great, great, you know, film out there to watch. Woes right. us for having all these problems. Yeah, right. All right. So what's your number three?
My number three, I'm going to veer off of our established patterns. And my number three is actually a board game.
All right.
So I got really into board games broadly, but specifically like miniature based board games and and like tabletop skirmish games and stuff in the pandemic when I couldn't play them. I got really into them when I couldn't play them. It was very exciting. But one of the ones that I have always liked, and I liked even since I was a kid, was the Warhammer Quest line. I had the original Warhammer Quest when I was younger. And it's a dungeon exploring, you know, dungeon crawl board game a la like HeroQuest, made by the people who make Warhammer, set in the world of Warhammer. They've made like five different versions over the years, and each one, you know, has a different, slightly different setting and a different story and everything. And the one that came out in 2021 was Warhammer Quest Cursed City, which is vampire themed, essentially. Like the city is overrun by vampires, and it's this handful of like fantasy heroes trying to rid the city of vampires.
Okay,
so it's basically like Castlevania, but in the Warhammer world.
All right.
I was very excited about that. And like, it's got a million, you know, little like plastic skeletons and zombies and a giant bat monster and swarms of bats and all that shit. And so I've played it like once, maybe twice. I played it twice, maybe three times. I don't know, not many times, but like the models are fun and they're really, really fun to put together and they're gorgeous. And like, I love to look at it even if I haven't gotten to play it
much. Yeah, no. And you tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think just from listening to you now for at least 6 months, kind of write about and talk about your love of these games, the closest thing that I can get to is that I love going on vacation. Okay. Mm-hmm. But at least 75% of the fun for vacation for me is the planning part, right? It's like, oh, this is what we can do here. This is what I can read about, or this is how I can prepare. It seems like you get as much enjoyment preparing to play and creating the characters or reading about them or whatever, which I think is rad. You know, like it's no wonder you're an author. You can create those stories without the gameplay, you know?
Yeah. Like there's a joke that, and it's one of those jokes that isn't a joke because it's 100% true, that like buying games is a separate hobby from playing them.
Okay.
And yeah, like there's fun in just like buying them and like putting the pieces together. And I've gotten really into putting the models together, which, you know, is its own sort of little hobby. I don't paint them still, but, and like, but like even games that don't have models, just like, you know, taking all the pieces apart and looking, you know, at all the crap you get in the box and, you know, reading the rules and imagining it and all that shit. Like there's definitely fun in all that.
Yeah, that's cool. Now I am dead serious. We should do, we should find some people that like to play, and I'm sure you know them. I want to be involved because I want to play. I did a little D&D back in the day, but I honestly have no Warhammer experience. I think it would be totally fun. It would be fun to, I think, maybe do a live episode. Is that a thing that, like, play?
There's a million of those, yeah. Like,
oh, okay.
So one of the most popular things, like, in the world right now is Critical Role.
Right, right. Have seen that, right.
Yeah, and that's just people playing D&D on a podcast live.
Yeah.
That's all it is. They're like professional actors, but that's still all it is.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a bunch of professional actors playing D&D live. That's all it is.
Well, I am not a professional actor, but I would love to play Warhammer. So we gotta figure that shit out.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. We'll figure something out. Once, you know, once we can get more than two people in a room safely.
Right, right. Yeah. Maybe, who knows? Maybe the Stray Cat will house the first ever live Warhammer, you know, whatever. We got to find a good, not to belabor the Warhammer conversation anymore, but what do they call the dungeon master there?
So it depends, like, what you're playing. Like, there are full-on D&D style role-playing games of set in the Warhammer world. And I think they're just called the Game Master in those, because Game Master is the non-D&D branded term for Dungeon Master.
Okay.
But, like Cursed City, for example, doesn't have one. It's co-op. You play against the board.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And so the enemies are all AI. Essentially, they operate on a programmed, you know, they do certain things in a certain order, kind of a, depending on various variables.
Okay. All right. So then we wouldn't even have to find somebody to do that. I love it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. So while Oren gets us all set up to play Warhammer, I'll move on to my number two. My number two is a movie directed by David Charbonnet, I'm going to say, is how you say that. I apologize, David. But it stars Ezra Dewey, who was in a number of movies this year. It's called The Djinn. And it's another one of those kind of independent films. I believe it was released by IFC Midnight, who have some of my own honorable mentions too. But I have said on this show many times that I love, love, love movies that could be stage plays. And it is very much one of those films. It's essentially just the child actor and some computer-generated boogeyman, spooky spooks, and it's just so fun to watch. Relatively small budget. The kid actor is absolutely fantastic. But yeah, the Djinn is and should be on your list of movies to check out in 2022. Kind of the whole slate of movies released by IFC Midnight this year. There wasn't a dud. There were some that I liked more than others, but this movie and then another that made my honorable mentions are really kind of the ones that I think really shine the brightest, and they're excellent. So it's good stuff. Yeah, Oren, what's your number two?
I'm just gonna assume that Spooky Spooks is the official term for what there are in this movie.
Yeah, it's like the smoke. I referred to it for a long time as the smoke monster because the djinn is kind of made of smoke. And and I held out hope until the last 30 minutes that this was the missing lost spinoff that was going to make everything make sense. And it was 100% not. So,
or was it?
Right. It's super meta if you're going that route. So, all right, you're number two, my man.
My number two is another book, but not a comic book this time. It is The Secret Goatman Spook Show by Jonathan Rabb. And it is a collection of short stories by Jonathan, who is kind of he's an up-and-coming, I guess, writer, I would say. Like, I don't think a lot of people know him yet, but I think they should. He's really good.
Yeah.
This is his first collection of short stories. He's done a couple of novels. And I love short stories more than novels, so I was very excited and was not disappointed at all. It's a great, great collection.
Yeah. I was first introduced to him with, and I'm going to butcher the title, I didn't write it down, but he essentially wrote a novel that was kind of like a spec script for the sequel of a movie where the other movies don't really exist. It was like the fourth movie in this, like, you know, big, long history of movies. And, it's great.
It was Camp Ghoul Mountain Part 6.
Yes, that's it. That's it. So fun. So, like, talk about a book that would pair so, so well with my number one. Which I'll get to in just a second, but the kind of like examining what a horror movie is, what the tropes they're talking about, and then how can we use those tropes to upend some of the traditions of the horror genre? Like, fuck yeah, dude. It's so perfect. Smart. So yeah, clever.
And his short stories are all like almost all like that. They're all very like, they're not all meta, but a lot of them are. But they're all very like laden with like conspiracy theories and the idea that what we take for granted is not what it appears to be, and that there may be messages in things that we think are innocuous or stupid or, you know, like the sixth movie in a slasher franchise or whatever that we wouldn't pay any attention to, but it might have secret wisdom buried in it. And like, there's tons of that in his stories. And it's so, and they're all written with so much genuine affection for the stuff he's writing about.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, it's infectious. Like you can't not also love it.
I love that. I think the remarkable thing about the first novel is that he writes with this kind of satire and this kind of wit that if he didn't genuinely love it, it would feel like it was making fun of it.
Right.
But because he's such a fan, like, it's like, oh, no. Like, we see it for what it is. And it is so much more than what most people think it is, you know? Yeah. So instead of kind of simplifying and aping things, he somehow makes it like smarter and more clever, yet way more entertaining. I don't know, man. Yeah. I'm with you. I got to check it out. I haven't read it yet, but yeah.
And it's a Trevor Henderson cover. So.
Oh, even better. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. All right. So that leaves me a great double feature. If you were reading both of these books back to back, my number one piece of horror content of the year, hands down, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones. The long and the short of it is this follows a high school student who not only is Native American, but also comes from an abusive family, frankly. And she also loves horror movies and is able to connect with various people in her life through these horror movies. And then it puts her smack dab in the middle of her own horror movie, but she has to kind of rely on this wit and wisdom that she has developed through this it's an encyclopedia of information in her mind all about, you know, scary movies in general. It is so sweet. There is a scene between her and a teacher at the end of this book that fucking made me weep as I was listening to it while cooking dinner. My wife came in and was like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "It's just so sweet. It's so, you know, like it, like rarely does anybody get like the teacher student relationship from both the teacher and the student." And Dr. Jones here has 100% managed to capture both. It is a fantastic book. My guess is, it will be nominated for, it should win another Stoker Award. It's fantastic.
And one of the things about like Stephen Graham Jones is that always in his books, like no matter how ridiculous the book becomes, and some of his books like go really bonkers places. Like this one doesn't, I mean, it goes a little bonkers by the end. It really pulls out all the stops by the ending. But like, even then, like it's tame compared to some of his others. Like some of his others are, you know, like, sharks fighting zombies bonkers, like, you know, we're real bonkers, but like the characters are always so human, like so human and so real and so heartfelt always, like no matter what situation they're in, like there is never a lazy stereotype or a two-dimensional cardboard cutout. No matter how unimportant the character is, you know, they're always this very real person. It's amazing. Yeah. It's a gift. It really is.
That's really well put. Like, I you cannot help but feel for the little girl in this novel, but also root her on. But she is never an indigenous stereotype. Her family, while they may have some hallmarks of some of the stereotypes of some of the problems plaguing reservation life, you know, they are fully formed characters. You understand why they act the way they do, and you sympathize with them. Even if they're fucking terrible, awful human beings, you are like, I get it, you know?
Her father, it would have been so easy in anyone else's hands for her father to be a stereotype of, you know, Native Americans, or a stereotype of just abusive fathers. And he does many of those things, but he is never a stereotype. He's always a whole person.
Yep.
a whole awful person in many cases, but always a whole person.
Yeah, well, and I think
there are awful people in the world. I mean,
and they are awful, some because of their circumstances, some because of their choices, but like, it's never as simple as, at least with his human characters, it's never as simple as these guys are good and these guys are bad. You know, they are all an amalgamation of the circumstances and the fucking hands that they were dealt. And right. It is in that way, kind of the opposite of like Fear Street or something like that. It is all very adult, and that doesn't mean that it's not enjoyable. It doesn't mean that it is not entertaining.
No, it's a blast, just by the end, especially.
Yeah. But he has something to say, and horror is a vehicle for which he is able to tell these very human stories. So yeah, man, I'm fucking so excited to have him on. The book is fantastic. So yeah,
it's an amazing book. Like, I would have put it on my list if I didn't A, want to put another book on there, and B, you already had it on yours, so I knew we'd cover it.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise it would have been on mine. Like, it's so good. It's so good. And it's the one thing on your list that I've experienced, because I didn't watch any of them.
Yay. We made it to number one. So what's your number one? Is it something that I too have experienced?
It is. My number one is Malignant. James Wan's Malignant.
The body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her? No. But I saw her die. I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says
his name is Gabriel.
I think he's someone from my past.
Happy birthday.
Whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Just stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend?
He's the devil.
Again, he's getting closer.
He wants to talk to you.
Mom, what do you know?
He's coming for me.
The best fucking ridiculous trauma movie that ever wasn't released by Trauma, that came out in 2021, that pulled a complete rug pull on literally everyone in the world by making a trailer that looked exactly like another Insidious, and then instead giving us what someone called the Basket Case Matrix.
Oh, like, I like it. That's very
just
good.
Just the most over the top, ridiculous, weird movie of the year.
Yeah, and we get super in depth. If you haven't listened to it already, you should check out our Malignant episode, because we kind of get in depth and talk some about jolly movies in general, but certainly how Malignant kind of plays into some of those aspects of it. And if nothing else, this movie has spawned a billion different GIFs that you can use on Twitter. Like, great. There's so many.
Oh my God.
So many.
Did you see any of the Halloween costumes people did? They were so good.
Oh my God.
People did such good Gabriel Halloween costumes. They were amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So fun. Like, I will look back on that movie just as, you know, like, the highlight of most of my weeks are getting to do these shows and kind of talking and pretending like things are normal when they're not. But Malignant was one of those moments that it was just so fun to watch, so fun then to go and talk about. And it was like, all right, that's kind of why we do what we do, you know, for shit like that. That's big and bonkers and wonderful. So,
oh my God. And like, I love, and you know, for the best of the year for, again, one of the other sites I write for, I had to pick a movie and I picked Malignant and I wrote a little bit about it. And like, one of the things I said there was like, you know, most directors, right, they try to go from success to success. If they have a critical success, they make more things that are, you know, critical success or likely to be critical successes. If they have a big box office success, they make more things that are like that. And then you have James Wan, who like had, you know, the very, very successful Conjuring films under his belt. He made Aquaman and Fast and the Furious, which made all the money in the world. And he took all that cachet and he made this thing.
Yeah. Which would, yeah. Like, I can't help but thinking, first off, the movie's great. I loved it. But it's niche, right? It's very niche.
Yeah.
It reminds me, there is this roast of James Franco that I stumbled across, I think on TikTok, right? And it's got, I'm going to blank on his name. He was heavy, then he lost a bunch of weight. He was in Moneyball. Come on, help me out. He's purely a comedic actor. Anyways, he's roasting James Franco, right?
Sure.
And he's like, you know, most people say one movie to make money for the studio, one movie to win the awards, and then I'm going to do a movie because, you know, it makes me feel good or I want to put my artistic effort into it. I really appreciate James Franco's take, which is one movie for me, or one movie for the studio, one movie to make a little bit of money, and then nine movies that nobody fucking wants to see. And I was like, fair for James Franco. But I think at least in this capacity, part of our joy of the fact that Malignant came out is that it exists, period, because it is so niche and it is so not
like
for everybody.
And yet everybody loved it. And I think that's partly because it was 2021. Like, it felt so right in this stupid, effed up, terrible year to have this stupid, effed up, semi-terrible movie that was also great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it feels like a good moment from the fucked up pandemic years, you know, right. Like it is a thing born out of all of that. And I kind of loved it. So, very good. All right. So we're running short on time. So I'm just going to run down my list of honorable mentions. Mine are very, very long. Let me mention, first off, and I'm purely going to mention this. I won't even call it honorable because it wasn't my cup of tea. But the other night I saw Titan, which is Justine Ducanneau's newest film. She did another that I really enjoyed called Raw. That is a fantastic film, really good, has a lot to say about family and whatnot. Titan is not that movie. It involves having sex with cars and perhaps hiding from the police by pretending to be an opposite gendered firefighter. It's very fucking weird. Don't know if it was my thing. I won't say it's bad. Like, it's got some beautiful, beautiful scenes in it, but man, a little too fucking weird for me, I think. So that's okay. So The Stylist, which actually went on my 2020 list, and that's why I didn't get nominated, but fantastic film, comes out of Kansas City. You should check it out. I think it made like the Academy's list of top 10 horror movies. So Grady Hendrix has a new novel out called The Final Girl Support Group. I thought it was just okay. It pales in comparison to My Heart is a Chainsaw, but it was good. It was interesting. Broadcast Signal Intrusion, another fantastic film out of Fantastic Fest and Fantasia. Malignant, that we talked about before. Neither one of us has mentioned Naya DaCosta's Candyman. It was not a perfect film, but I think opens the door for a lot of really interesting discourse.
Like, if we had been making top like five lists of just movies, it probably would have made it onto mine. Like, it was, you know, it was a strong movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely would have made my top 10 for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, fantastic movie. The Green Sea, which is a fucking weird movie, okay? It is a movie directed by Randall Plunkett, and it stars Catherine Isabel, who was the kind of main actress in Ginger Snaps and a billion other horror movies, all right? But I wrote a review for it because initially I had a different writer who was going to write the review, and then they backed out, but they backed out with like 24 hours left to go in the deadline, right? So I was like, oh, fuck, all right. So when it happens, the editor writes it. I was also teaching zombie camp at the time. So like my whole world was kind of this organized chaos. But I the film is small and weird and is just like a creepy, like it's like a creepy kind of folk horror tale that you might tell around the campfire or whatever. It uses really bizarre blue filters, I think, to help it out. But she cusses like every fourth word, and it's so refreshing and amazing and felt organic. Because sometimes when people cuss, especially right. that much, you're like, you're trying too hard. All right. Nobody has that filthy mouth except me. And I feel like I, you know, curse pretty naturally. And so in the review, I was like, every curse felt genuine, felt earned, felt organic. And she quote tweeted that and was like, this is the best review I've ever gotten. And it was like, essentially she just cut out. It was like, she's great at cussing. You know, it was like, I hope she read the whole thing and didn't just, you know, nope. think I thought that. Yeah.
Just got that far and was like, fuck it. Yes, this is great. This is right, all I ever right. wanted.
So yeah, that's The Green Sea, which you should check out. It's really interesting. The Vigil, which definitely would have made my top six. It was probably the next one out. By Keith Thomas, who is also doing the new Firestarter. It's another IFC Midnight film. And last but not least, getting a wide release on Shudder here in a couple of weeks, is Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, a history of folk horror, which was directed by Kirila Janice. So, yeah, man, lots of good stuff.
I am very excited to see Woodlands Dark and Days Bewitched, and I'm going to watch it on my huge-ass bonkers Severin folk horror box set that I got that is 19 freaking movies, including that one, three of which I have ever seen.
Well, shit, so, you're gonna be watching those movies.
That's gonna be so weird.
You're gonna have 19 movies to get a jump start on whatever you're watching in 2022, you know. You gotta get right? through all Except, that shit.
I mean, yeah, like they're all like, oh, they're like all from other countries and stuff, and like stuff I've never even heard of, most of them. I'm very excited.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so what made your honorable mentions?
My honorable mentions, some of the ones we've already talked about. My Heart is a Chainsaw, of course.
Yep.
Candyman, Broadcast Signal Intrusion, which was on your honorable mentions list. All really good stuff. Phil Gillette's animated sort of sword and sorcery horror, cosmic horror thing, Spine of Night. Antlers, which
that's good.
You know, like a lot of people were pretty lukewarm on it, but like I love that like dying small town in the middle of autumn, people looking at murder scenes like vibe, and it had a ton of that plus a cool monster, so I was in.
Fair. I dig it.
Last Night in Soho has some problems, but is like very, you know, just visually very inventive and fun, and looks very different from most horror movies because it's, you know, so like so much about like that kind of 60s visual palette.
Cool.
Makes it look really different from what we're used to seeing from horror movies. So I had a good time with that. There were actually a couple of new Junji Ito collections that came out this year. Neither of them are my favorites, but Deserter, the most recent one, which just came out, is a bunch of his older stuff, which is really exciting because some of his older stuff is really classic, but has not gotten
a good
released in the States in a really long time.
Cool.
And so like Deserter has a few of his sort of best early stories, like Long Hair in the Attic, which is one of his most iconic stories.
I'll have to check that out. That's cool.
It's really good stuff. And then a thing that's not really a thing from this year, but also was kind of, I saw Possession from 1981 for the first time this year, and I saw it in a theater, like on the big screen, in the new 4K restoration and everything. And it was just an amazing experience and felt, again, very 2021. Just nothing but people falling apart and screaming at one another.
Yeah, that seems very fitting. Did you see that at Screenland Dormer?
I did, yeah.
Nice.
Okay. It was amazing. It was a really great experience.
Okay, so here is a movie that I thought would make your list that didn't. So you got to tell me how you felt about it, because I was more positive than lukewarm, but it was interesting. You saw Censor, right?
I did. In my head, it didn't come out in 2021. Didn't make my list. Like, I think it did, technically. But in my head, it didn't. I saw it at Panic Fest. And so I assumed that it had been giving festival play already.
Oh, okay.
And so I think I just sort of conceptually, like, just blocked out that it was a 2021 release.
All right.
But also, like, Censor's a movie I love until the last, like, 30 minutes. And then it's a movie that's just all right.
Yeah.
But, like I think its message is good, that, like, you know, even people with good intentions can do terrible things.
Sure,
yeah. But, like, you know, it was really good when it was just, like, an evocation of this sort of moment in history and this character, this very lonely character, and, you know, all the stuff. But, like, once the actual plot happened, I was less interested.
Yeah. It's funny that you put it that way. The film was okay, right? And the film's plot, I think, in many ways reminded me a lot of, like, 8mm or something like that. That has this type of film or whatever, is this apocryphal thing that we have to investigate or whatever. And in that way, Broadcast Signal Intrusion is very similar.
But
I kind of just wanted to follow the main actress from Censor around and watch her, like, do her job. Be like, can I just get more of her being like, that's 2 or 3 seconds longer than I wanted playing with the entrails. So you're going to have to cut that, you know, like, I want that shit. I would watch that all day long. Yeah.
And she was amazing. And those scenes when it was just, like, evoking the Video Nasty era of, like, British censorship and, like, that time period and world were amazing.
Yeah.
It reminded me in that regard a little bit of, like, so we were talking about Rebecca Hall earlier. She was in this movie, and I cannot remember the name of it. It's a ghost movie where she plays a person who debunks spiritualists. It's from a few years ago. It's called, like, The Awakening or something.
Okay. All right.
I when I was talking about her earlier, I think it's her that's in it anyway. When I was talking about her earlier, I told the person I was talking to, like, I can't think of the name of it, but all ghost movies have the same title. They're all called, like, The Admonishing or something, right?
I like it. All right. Yeah.
So it's called something like that. But anyway, like, it's a great movie until the ghosts show up. And then it's kind of a boring movie.
Yeah.
Like, when it's just her doing her debunking shit, it's amazing.
just do the thing that
and, like, and Censor's the same way. Like, until it has a plot, it's great, and as soon as it has a plot, it's just fine. Like, it's still good, it's not bad once it has a plot, but I loved it when it didn't.
Yeah. It was just this snippet out of time. You got it right. It was called The Awakening.
And Broadcast Signal Intrusion, you're right, is the exact same way. Like, Broadcast Signal Intrusion I loved more than Censor, in part because Broadcast Signal Intrusion is such a good, like, love letter to, like, tapehead DIY analog weirdos.
Yeah.
Like, it's even got a scene where they go thrifting, which is, like, 100% a thing that, you know, all the analog weirdos I know do. And it's so good at that. And, like, as an actual conspiracy thriller, it kind of falls apart completely, frankly.
Yeah.
But, like, its atmosphere is so good that I don't care.
Well, very good. We have run well over for this episode, but is there anything that we want to add to wrap up? The one thing I would ask of you, right? I think it'll be really fun. Hopefully we'll still be around in a year from now that we can reflect back on our New Year's resolution. Mine is very measurable. It's very easy, right? I want to see 100 films this year.
That came out this films. Year?
I want to see...
Like 100 films total or 100 films that came out in 2021? How am I going to hold
this? I think I want to see 100 films this year, of which 75 come out from this year. The other 25 can be whatever, you know, because we'll have to watch it for whatever. Right. Your house is on fire.
it always is. We live near a fire station. Like, fire trucks go by here like 8 times a day.
Really, whatever. Not even anything. All right, so 100 movies, of which 75 have to be new, 25 can be old, but 100 is my total. Hold me to it. What is yours?
I think what I would like to do this year is actually, I'm hoping to also catch more movies that came out this year, because 19 is low. That's a low number. But I don't think I'll ever reach 75. I don't think I have ever gotten to 75 movies that came out in that year, in any year ever. But I would like to do more than 19. But I think my actual resolution is going to be to watch all the movies I already own and haven't watched.
Nice. That's good. Because you own a fuck ton of shit that you've never seen.
I own a lot of movies I've never seen. Like, they're all in sets for the most part. Like, I own a lot of sets that contain movies I've never seen. But that's like a lot of movies. I don't have any idea how many that is. Many.
But that's it. That's easily verifiable, right? Yep. Like, we teach, not only are taught as teachers, but teach in school. You know, you got to set goals that are measurable. And in this way, very measurable, and we can see if we've achieved them at the end of it or not. So, yeah. Very good.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say, it's hilarious to me to like have you be like, I want to see 100 movies, total, of which like 75 are new, and I'm like, I always see more than 100 movies, and 75 of them have never been new.
Yeah, like, right.
For every movie I see that comes out in a year, even in my most prolific year, I see 10 or 20 that didn't come out that year.
Yeah, man. And that's why you're here and I value your input, is there is all of this shit that I hope to see eventually. I will definitely see if we do an episode about it. And, you know, like, you could be like, hey, if you want to get into this shit in the 50s, you know, or whatever, check out these like half a dozen movies or whatever. That's so much, because it's daunting when you look at all that shit.
Oh my God,
like,
it is. Yeah.
Fuck, I can't. I don't even know where to fucking start. Yeah. The Orin Gray can be like, here, start with these 5. You'll be fine. We'll get you there. Well, if the rest of our audience wants to ask you for your advice or wants to follow your recommendations, or take a look at, you know, when your newest collection is coming out, where can they find you on social media?
I am at Orin Gray on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd, all those places. And then at OrinGray.com.
Love it. Very good. You can follow more of my stuff where I tweet about the horror of politics and education at Ty Unsel. Otherwise, head on down to SignalHorizon.com. This podcast comes from you free of sponsorship, mostly because Orin and I like to talk about movies, and Signal Horizon as a brand really believes in looking beyond just, you know, the surface area of the genre that we love so much. So check out more of Looking Beyond at SignalHorizon.com. And next time, what are we going to cover in 2022, Orin?
We are going to start 2022 off with Scream 4 and possibly some other Scream movies while we're at it.
Yeah. It's going to be our month of Screams, and we're super stoked to bring it to you. But I think until then, kiss that 2021 goodbye and class dismissed.